Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. You're listening to the theme from The Incredibles. Brad Bird, the director of the film, joins us later this hour to talk about his curation of the TCM Essential series of films, along with host Ben Mankiewicz. But first, our critics review Bull, a new film starring Rob Morgan, directed and co-written by Annie Silverstein. A Secret Love, a Netflix documentary directed by Chris Bolin. And the French comedic horror film Deerskin, starring Jean Dujardin of The Artist, written and directed by Quentin Dupuis. We'll also be hearing about a number of other dramatic films, including All Day and a Night, starring Ashton Sanders and Jeffrey Wright. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us this week, as I'm joined by critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com, and Leo Lowenstein, who's film columnist for the Santa Monica Daily Press. We're going to talk about the new films that are out streaming, on demand, and premium cable. We'll also get some special picks from Leo and Tim, and we also will pay tribute to Indian actor Irfan Khan, who died earlier this week at the age of 53. We begin with the drama Bull, starring Rob Morgan and Amber Harvard. Annie Silverstein is the director and co-screenwriter with Johnny McAllister. The film is on video on demand. Leo, what'd you think of Bull?
Oh, this film was just extraordinary. It's everything that you want an indie movie to be. It's incredibly well-written, very carefully drawn, and directed with a kind of almost documentary-like sense of realism and naturalism, which makes sense because Annie Silverstein started in documentary. So this brings me back to the filmmaking of people like Deborah Granick and Julia Kelly Reichardt, who I really admire. And so the relationship between Rob Morgan, the African-American bull riding, aging, grumpy neighbor of this young girl played by Amber Harvard, takes an interesting turn when she decides that she wants to learn how to ride bulls. Now, it takes a while to get to that point, and it's kind of a twisty, turny, circuitous route in a way. But the fact that it sort of breathes so much naturalism and so much kind of clarity and strength is really unusual in this day and age.
We're talking about the film Bull. Tim, what'd you think?
It's a very, very good movie indeed. And Rob is actually playing an ex-bull rider who at this moment in the film is doing what they used to call rodeo clowns. The guys who would get in front of that bull after the bull throws the rider. And it's a very, very dangerous job. They don't call them rodeo clowns anymore. But that's what they do. And that's what he's doing when we meet him. He's been beat up real bad over the course of his life. I love this movie because it takes place in the sort of poor outskirts of both black and white communities around San Antonio, Texas. Mostly we're in this black community, but we spent some time in this very poor white community. The little girl, this is her acting debut. She's fantastic, Amber. Her mother's in prison. She's living with a grandmother. She has a little sister. It's just a mess, her life. And she starts hanging out with this old black ex-rodeo clown next door. And what I love about this movie is the way Miss Silverstein sees these communities. Man, she can actually see these communities, who these people are, what they do, how they live. She does not allow herself or this film to slip into any stereotypes, but reality is always right there. It's a very, very good movie, and just an astute directing.
Well, I know what I'm seeing this weekend. Bull is the film available on multiple video on demand platforms, starring Rob Morgan and Amber Hovard, Annie Silverstein, the director and co-screenwriter. It's unrated. The documentary A Secret Love, about two women back in the mid-1940s who fell in love, one a professional baseball player. The Netflix documentary is directed by Chris Bolin. Lael.
This is such a good movie, too. You know, not just because of its portrait of these two women who had a closeted love affair for so many years, and that in itself is fascinating. Terry, as you mentioned, was a baseball player. She was part of the original, you know, League of Their Own, the women's baseball, professional women's baseball in the U.S. And Pat was at one time she was a hockey player. These two women both came from Canada, and their relationship blossomed and bloomed and continued over so many years. They lived in Chicago. They had great family and friends, but they did not actually reveal their relationship until maybe only 3 years before the documentary was made, which came as sort of no surprise to some of the people that knew and loved them. But the fact that they, coming from a different generation from, you know, so long ago, hadn't even been able to express to themselves kind of what they were. They referred to themselves as cousins. It was sort of lovely to see them coming to terms with their own sexuality and their own relationship. And also, there's an extremely poignant part of the film, which is just how difficult it is to deal with elder care, to find the right place for people to be. And there's one of their family members who sort of in this really kind of crushing scene, which is just sort of the emotional climax of the film, breaks down because Pat is resisting moving out of their home of 20 something years. And Terry is clearly, you know, falling apart and losing weight and getting weaker by the day. So this whole kind of fly on the wall of watching them go through this excruciating challenge to figure out how to maneuver old age at the same time that they're maneuvering coming out with their relationship is really very, very powerful.
A Secret Love, the documentary from director Chris Bolin. It's unrated, streaming on Netflix. The French comedic horror film Deerskin is written and directed by Quentin Dupuis. Tim, tell us about this.
Yeah, Quentin there, QD, as we call him sometimes. Wade and I are always talking about Quentin. Quentin's an interesting fellow. Quentin made a movie a few years ago called Rubber, about a psychopathic tire that goes around.
Oh, yes. I never got to see that film, but it sounded great.
Oh, you're going to want to see that. This, not so sure. It's a very interesting film. Dujardin plays this man who's recently divorced. Let me start at the beginning. At the beginning of this film, we see several young children, these jackets, coats that they've been wearing. They take these jackets and they look into the camera and they say, "I swear never to wear a jacket again for as long as I live." And they put the jacket in the trunk of a car. Four or five of them do that. Cut to the present day. One of those children was our guy, and he's on a hunt for a deer skin jacket. He finds it, buys it from this man for a great deal of money, a pure deer skin jacket with a little fringe and everything. Now, the interesting question of this film becomes, who's in charge, this guy or the jacket? Because the jacket and he start talking to each other. Before we know it, we're in a film that's about a film. He, along with that jacket, he gets a camera from the guy he buys the jacket from, and he starts making a little documentary about everything that he does for the rest of the movie. Lael, you want to take it from there?
Let me just say, Tim, I am glad you took that bullet, because I was trying to, while I was watching the film, I was thinking, how am I ever going to explain this? It's so weird. It's just, it's a cross genre hybrid, which really perfectly stars Jean Dujardin, because as the star of The Artist and the OSS movies, he's no stranger to satire and to American movie genres. This is in itself sort of a play on the horror film, also kind of a play on the Western in some ways. He does try to pass himself off as a filmmaker, but it's clear he's never held a camera before in his life. So he then sort of tries to kind of sweet talk this girl at the bar into becoming his editor, even though he doesn't even know what an editor is. All the while, he's got this dialogue, as Tim said, going back and forth with him and the jacket. Now, the jacket never moves. It's just he's sort of imagining the jacket, that the jacket has a personality, and he's voicing the jacket. He does a good job of doing both voices. It should be added, and I hope that Tim agrees with me, that the jacket, it looks ridiculous on it because...
Yeah.
Because it's too short, it's too small. It's a sort of, even as a deerskin jacket goes, I don't think it would be worth. And I believe he pays like 7,500 euros, which is an obscene amount of money for this jacket that doesn't even fit him.
So it's totally absurd.
It's absurd, but it's so deadpan. I mean, he does actually end up start. You know, well, I won't go too. It gets dark. It gets very dark. It's weird. It's a weird, weird movie. But it's only like 77 minutes, which is certainly a digestible amount of time.
We're talking about the film Deerskin, the French comedic horror film. It's unrated, and you can see it at virtual cinemas, including Lemley's Virtual and the Frida Cinema in Orange County, their virtual cinema online. The horror film The Wretched, written and directed by Brett Pierce and Drew T. Pierce, who are brothers. The film stars John Paul Howard and Piper Curda. Tim, what'd you think of The Wretched?
You know, this is kind of okay. It's a witch movie in which you know that there is, in fact, a witch. I like the way this movie starts. The Pierce brothers made a pretty good zombie movie about 10 years ago, too, about these totally lucid zombies, these two zombies, and then you're in a world of zombies. But these two particular zombies know they're zombies and don't like it. So they have an interesting sort of take on horror. Here, we open with this film set 35 years ago, and we see a babysitter go into a house, and the babysitter is looking for the family. She ends up down in the basement. She sees something absolutely horrible in the basement. Cut to some years before. Young man arrives in this exact same town, this house. His parents are getting a divorce. He's a little upset about that. He makes friends with a few people around town, including a little boy who lives in the house across the street. The little boy goes missing. He goes over there to talk to the mom and the dad about the little boy, and they have no idea what he's talking about. They never had a son. What's going on? Okay. This is when he starts to investigate, and this is when the witch problem comes to bear. I don't know. I thought it was a sharp tale about all kinds of things, but specifically about loss, the loss of family, the search for community. It's an interesting, scary little movie.
The Wretched is the horror film written and directed by Brett Pierce and Drew T. Pierce. It's available on video on demand, including iTunes and Google Play. The movie's unrated. The romantic comedy The Half of It is streaming on Netflix, written and directed by Alice Wu. Leah Lewis and Daniel Deemer are the stars. Lael.
So this is a pretty cute retelling of the Cyrano de Bergerac story, which was memorably retold, I don't know what, 20, 30 years ago as Roxanne with Steve Martin, Daryl Hannah. This has a little bit of a twist in that the teen who is hired by the dumb jock to write letters for his crush is actually herself gay and is attracted to the girl that she's writing the letters for. So that's, except for the gender swapping part of it, you know, the much of it's still kind of along the lines of Cyrano and Roxanne. It's a sweet twist because it also brings in a lot of social media elements, the use of texting. It's done very cleverly. There's also a kind of a subtext involving the fact that the girl, Ellie Chu, is Chinese American. She has a dad who is the train station master, and doesn't speak much English. And so she has this life where she's at home, this very kind of dutiful, diligent daughter, speaks Chinese with her father and speaks Mandarin, and then has to be at school. She's a very accomplished, she's a top student. She has yet to blossom. She has yet to experience love. And so she finds in going through the process of writing these texts and letters and cultivating this relationship that she herself is figuring out who she is. And she didn't even really know that she was gay or couldn't acknowledge that. So it's cute. It's sweet. It's funny. Alice Wu did a movie called Saving Face a few years ago that was a Chinese-American lesbian story that got some traction. The one problem I had with it was that it totally robbed from Tootsie, a movie that I love as well, very, very much.
Great film.
Lines that were lifted wholesale. And I just thought, God, where's the acknowledgement? I looked in the credits, I couldn't find the acknowledgement. So that's just, that kind of irritated me a bit. But other than that, you know, it's a perfectly pleasant movie.
The Half of It, the romantic comedy starring Leah Lewis and Daniel Deemer, Alice Wu, the writer-director. It's rated PG-13, and it's streaming on Netflix. As we continue on Film Week, we'll hear from our critics about the drama All Day and A Night. It also is streaming on Netflix. Joe Robert Cole, the writer-director of that film. The comedic drama Vanilla, another one that we'll hear about, stars Will Dennis, who also wrote and directed the film. And the drama South Mountain, starring Talia Balsam. Hilary Brower is the writer-director of that film. So we've got a bunch of movies from writer-directors that we'll be talking about, streaming on Netflix as well as available on multiple video on-demand platforms. Later this hour, Brad Bird, the terrific director, will be joining us to talk about Turner Classics movies, The Essentials, which he's guest curating. So good to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Whether you hear us at 89.3, whether you listen on your smart speaker by telling it to play KPCC or the KPCC app, and also remind you Film Week's available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm joined this week by film critics Leo Lowenstein, also with us Tim Cogshell, and the next film they review is All Day and a Night. The drama stars Ashton Sanders, Jeffrey Wright, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. Joe Robert Cole is the writer-director. Tim.
Yeah. Joe Robert is a co-writer of Black Panther along with Ryan Coogler a couple of years ago, and directed a film called Amber Lake from, I don't know, middle 2000s or something like that. It was pretty good, too. This film is good filmmaking in service of a narrative that I absolutely cannot stand. A true-ish sort of narrative. It's about a Black community and how violence and drugs and poverty lead generation after generation of Black folks into prison. So fathers go to prison, followed by their sons. Sometimes they're in prison at the same time. That happens in this movie. This happens. I know that it does. There are way too many movies about it, and not nearly enough movies about what we saw in that first movie that we talked about, the Miss Silverstein's movie. That happens in this film. This film is egregious in a particular way, though, because what it wants us to do is to have empathy for what this young man does for his life. But in the opening moments of this film, we see this young man commit a horrible double homicide. Horrible double homicide. The balance of the film wants to dig him out of that hole for me. This is not possible. You cannot get there from here. And this film does not get there from here.
All right. We're talking about All Day and a Night. Joe Robert Cole, writer-director, rated R. It's streaming on Netflix. The comedic drama Vanilla stars Will Dennis and Kelsey Bowman Murphy. Will Dennis also the writer-director. Lael.
So this was apparently inspired by a real-life experience that Will Dennis had. He has recently broken up with a girlfriend and is called upon to transport the van that they had together to her in another city, New Orleans, several many miles away. I think he's in, they start out in New York. He meets a woman who he has sold the van to, but has sold the van back to him. So she's going on the journey with him. And she's sort of this delightful, quirky, completely weird like kind of feminist who's also a comedian and does a term I wasn't familiar with, but she's a cam girl. She does like addresses for Bitcoin online. He doesn't know that about her, but bit by bit, as their journey on the cross country continues, he manages to fall in love with her, but can't make sense of the fact that she's got this other job on the side. The problem that I had with the movie is that her part was so much better written than his. And he's actually the guy who wrote the movie and is acting in it. He's playing the lead guy. I felt like, you know, they had some crackling kind of intensity a couple of times in chemistry, but I really wanted to spend more time with her than I did with him. So I, in the end, wasn't rooting for their relationship that much.
Vanilla is the film. It's on video on demand, including Vudu, Google Play, and iTunes. The movie's unrated. The drama South Mountain stars Talia Balsam and Scott Cohen. Hilary Brower is the writer-director. Tim.
Miss Balsam had a long run on Mad Men most recently, but she has this long and deep acting resume, which accounts for why she is such an excellent, excellent actress. She's just wonderful in this movie, as is Scott Cohen and several other people, but the movie centers around her. She's this woman who has this home up in the Catskill Mountains that she shares with her husband and a couple of kids and a neighbor. Her husband is engaged in this affair with a woman who is, in fact, having a baby, even as they are having a little summer barbecue. All of this is going to wreak havoc in their marriage in all kinds of ways, with the daughters who are all going off to live their lives. And this movie is about that. It's about how all of this rips this family apart, but not in that sort of wild and vicious and horrible way that usually sort of manifests itself in these sort of movies. It's painful. It's deep and it's moving, but it's a calculated kind of thing that Hilary Brower puts us through here that I think is wonderful. She gets involved with a much, much, much younger man, but not in the way that usually happens in these movies. It's more of an emotional involvement with this young man who can simply see her. Hilary Brower made this wonderful movie back in 97 called The Sticky Fingers of Time. Might have been her debut film. Done a lot of work in between, but that movie and this movie are really, really excellent movies.
We're talking about South Mountain from writer-director Hilary Brower. The film's unrated on multiple video-on-demand platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vudu. It's also available on Blu-ray and DVD. The drama Working Man stars Peter Garrity, Billy Brown, and Talia Shire. It's written and directed by Robert Jury in his writing and directing feature debut. Tim.
Yeah. Debuting here, yet so patient he is the way he makes this film. Peter Garrity. Peter Garrity is 80 years old. He wouldn't mind me telling you that. I talked to him quite a lot. He's been on Ray Donovan recently, walking around Sneaky Pete. I've seen him many times. And Peter, at 80 years old, moves kind of slowly. This movie moves at the pace of Peter, the lead character of this film. He's this guy who's been working this job in this factory for a really, really long time, along with his neighbors, very blue collar, all of this. The factory's closing down. This is devastating to a man who has spent his whole life working. He's married to Talia Shire. After the factory closes, he gets up one day, does his whole routine, and walks himself over to that factory, sneaks in, and starts working. Billy Brown, a wonderful actor, sees this and decides that he's going to do the same thing. And then he brings the rest of those blue-collar workers into the factory, and they just go back to this factory, and they just start working, man. And this has an effect, of course, on the company that sold the factory, on the buyers who bought the factory. All of this is going to play itself out in a very particular way. Now, for a long time, this film has a sense of Italian neorealism, a sort of De Sica, Umberto D kind of thing going on. Eventually, a narrative is really imposed into the film that has to do with all kinds of things that are going on. That's unfortunate. I really wish that they had let that little narrative float away and we had just simply watched this movie play out in this almost neo-realistic sort of way. Nevertheless, It's a movie that I like a lot, and Brian Garrity is just fantastic in it, all 80 years of him.
Working Man is the film from writer-director Robert Jury. It's unrated on multiple video-on-demand platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, Fandango Now, and Vudu. Well, let's turn to some of our other picks of our critics, whether it's television series that are available for viewing at home or streaming films. Leo, let's talk with you about some of your favorites, including some films that are available to see on Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, and many other sites. Some of them international films you're very big on, including the Danish Oscar winner from many years ago, Babette's Feast.
Oh, yes. It's funny, Larry, because I've been thinking about food a lot. Where I work is about 5 feet from the refrigerator. So I'm always eating these days, like many of our listeners. And it made me want to see Babette's Feast again. And I remember it as, you know, this absolutely exquisite kind of revealing of character, place, time, and with the most gorgeous cinematography. There's a sort of poignancy to it as well. This movie came out, oh gosh, maybe 35 years ago, and it's set in maybe the late 1800s, and a woman has to prepare a feast for her family, and I think she's dying at the time, and it's the most exquisite, rapturously beautiful movie that I think really kind of ignited a whole spate of food-related movies.
It did. There were a whole bunch, and we can talk more about them, but it did. I mean, we had Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, Chocolat, Big Night, of course, with Stanley Tucci, and a number of those, and all of them really strong films.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you could do a whole food movie festival.
Would you include Willy Wonka in there, or is that
absolutely
too sugar rush there? And we should say Ratatouille, since we're talking with Brad Bird in a few minutes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can't even say enough about Ratatouille. There's a moment in there where the food critic, who many of us film critics thought was a stand-in for film critics, actually, is tasting the ratatouille, and he is immediately transported back to his childhood. This incredibly rapturous moment, and you feel it as a food lover, as a movie lover. You are absolutely inspired. And the same with Willy Wonka, by the way. That's on my all-time list of favorite films, and the original, not the Charlie and the Chocolate remake, but the original with Gene Wilder. You know, I to this day, I look for everlasting gobstoppers and hope that they might appear.
Hey, Tim, let's talk about some of your favorites, including the ESPN sensation 10-part documentary series on the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls, The Last Dance.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. If you're a big basketball fan like me, and I know you, Larry,
yes.
It's really very, very informative. This is what I think we're four episodes into a 10-part series, and it's already captivating completely. I was never a particularly big Michael Jordan fan. I was deeply appreciative of his skill as a basketball player, but hey, I'm all about Magic Johnson. You know what I'm saying? And for that matter, coming from the What are you going to do? So, but you know, you appreciate this guy. Now, this documentary shines him in an entirely different light. I understand him so much better now. And I got to tell you, you're going to want to watch the one on ESPN. It's on Hulu, ESPN, and I think maybe even ESPN2. The one on ESPN it's not particularly explicit, but they don't take the cussing out.
Okay.
And it's important. It really is. You're watching this documentary and somebody does something and you think to yourself and an explicit word comes up in your head. But that's not what's said on that Hulu documentary. You pop over to ESPN and you watch the exact same moment and you hear the actual response and you think that's what I would have said. So watch that one. And I cannot wait to watch the rest of this series.
The Last Dance on Hulu and ESPN. Also, you have a couple of Amazon Prime series to recommend. And The Expanse. I haven't seen this one. It's in season 4.
Yeah, it's in season four, which I just finished. It's interesting for this reason. Our little solar system, we have Earthlings have spread out into the solar system. There's a colony on Mars, and then there are all kinds of other people who are born in various different places in the solar system, but not born either on Mars or on Earth. This is what's interesting about this series to me. All of these people are Earthlings, yet they are still at it. The Martians can't stand the Earthlings. The Earthlings can't stand the Martians. The people who live out of it. I'm like, seriously? You're all Earthlings, yet we are still at it. There's something in that. Plus, the science fiction, the special effects are just absolutely outstanding in that series.
The Expanse on Amazon Prime. And briefly, Defiance, which is set in a future St. Louis?
Yeah, future St. Louis, where there's nothing left standing but that St. Louis arch, of which, of course, I grew up beneath. Interesting series. It's a post-alien invasion movie. We've been invaded by six or seven different alien races. And I just think it's neat that they took that and set it in the middle of the United States of America, in the middle of the country. So you have all of these things playing out right in the middle of the country. It's really kind of cool.
And an interesting city, as you know best, as a native of St. Louis, and to set it there instead of New York or L.A., that's great. Defiance in its third season. We want to, before the break, pay tribute to Irfan Khan, veteran character actor in Bollywood films, one of India's best-known actors who came to Hollywood, was in so many top movies. He played the park executive Masrani in Jurassic World, was in The Amazing Spider-Man, in The Life of Pi as well, and in Slumdog Millionaire. He also was a big part of that film, the Best Picture winner. He played the police inspector determined to prove that the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game show contestant, Jamal Malik, played by Dev Patel, cheated to win.
Okay, so, we wired up. Mobile or a pager? A coughing accomplice in the audience? Or microchip under the skin? Huh?
The chip is not here.
Not here?
No.
Okay, leave the chip. Leave the chip. Leave the chip. It's hot. And my wife is giving me hell. And I've got a desk full of murderers, rapists, extortionists, bum bandits, and you. So why don't you save us both a lot of time? And tell me how you cheated.
Khan also was in The Lunchbox, another one of my favorites. He died earlier this week at the age of 53, died complications of a colon infection, and he'd had a rare form of cancer a couple of years ago as well. Lael, quick memory of Irfan Khan?
Oh, well, he was in a movie that I loved called The Namesake, which was directed by Meera Nair. She is one of the most prominent Indian filmmakers, and also directed him in a very, very early role in Salaam Bombay, which was, I think, her first film. He had been cast in a much bigger part, but she decided to cut that character. So she remade another part for him, a much smaller part, and then said, don't worry, I'm going to make you a star. We're going to make something together. And eventually they made this movie, The Namesake, which is about this immigrant family that comes to New York and has to adjust to a new culture. It's a beautiful, moving film, and he's the patriarch in that film. And, you know, he's such a terrific man. Apparently he has like over 150 acting credits, which is pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
Quite young when he died.
Yeah, so sad to lose him. Tim, quick comment on Irfan Khan.
Well, yeah, it took almost 20 years. Salaam Bombay was 1988. The Namesake was 2006. In those intervening years, he had a really tough time as an actor. And it was after The Namesake, particularly as a big hit in America, that he came to the fore. His eyes. I interviewed him many times. I promise you, you could fall into his eyes as well as his voice. He was an extraordinary gentleman.
Irfan Khan in Slumdog Millionaire, Life of Pi, so many other films, who died at the age of 53, veteran character actor, but with such memorable roles in his films. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC, on the KPECC smartphone app, and much more. We'll be back with Brad Bird in just a minute.
A
listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC and the KPECC app. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. As you know, I'm a huge fan of Turner Classic Movies. In fact, Ben Mankiewicz and Dave Karger, Turner Classic Movie hosts, were just with us a couple of weeks ago to talk about the TCM Film Festival. But joining us on this edition of Film Week is the terrific director Brad Bird, known for such great films as Ratatouille, The Iron Giant, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and both of the Incredibles films. He is going to be curating 20 of his favorite films for TCM's The Essentials, the first of which is on this Saturday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific, on Turner Classic Movies. Brad, it's great to have you with us again on Film Week.
Wonderful to be here, sheltering in place.
Yeah, so I was going to say, first of all, before we get to your picks, this has to be such a strange time for you. Are you able to still write and work on your next project?
I am. Any meetings I have to be sort of Zoom meetings, which is a strange way to look at people's work. And while it's a triumph of technology that we have the possibility of doing that, it doesn't replace being with people in person. So that part of it is a little, it's fine, but I'm looking forward to the day when you can look people directly in the eye rather than through electronics.
Amen. What is the project you're working on right now?
Well, it's actually a couple of projects. One that is more or less written, and the other one that I'm in the process of writing. And that's the musical that I'm doing with Michael Giacchino.
Does it have a title yet?
It does, but I'm not ready to say it.
Okay. And is there anything you could generally say about the themes of the musical?
Not too much. Coming of age is one thing that you would say about it, but it has about maybe a half hour, 20 minutes to a half hour of animation in it, but it's a live action film. And it's kind of not in a way that people would imagine, though. I imagine that most people would think of Gene Kelly and Jerry Mouse or Mary Poppins when they think of animation and live action, but that's not the case here. And it's a little more skews a little older maybe than that.
Well, it's very exciting to see what you and Michael Giacchino come up with in this collaboration. The other already written project, is that something ready to go into production once we're through COVID-19?
Well, we'll see. It certainly seems that way, but as with everything else these days, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, some people are, once again decrying the demise of movie theaters and all this stuff. And I actually don't think that's the case. I think that when this is over and people feel safe to go out again, I think they're going to be hungry to have experiences and share experiences with other people. And, seeing a movie in a theater is as much as I love looking at movies, on TV, the experience of being in a movie theater and sharing it with other strangers in the dark is the ultimate way to see a movie.
It's irreplaceable. Yeah, the social experience, too.
People are really going to want to have that experience again.
We're talking with film director and writer Brad Bird. He is co-hosting or guesting with TCM host Ben Mankiewicz on The Essentials. It's an ongoing series on TCM where creative people come in and talk about their favorite films, the ones that either influence them the most or just that they absolutely love. And Saturday night, you're kicking it off with Singin' in the Rain, the great Gene Kelly musical, which is a backstage Hollywood musical as well. I've shown it in a film festival that I curate. And it's just, for so many younger people, they haven't had a chance to see this film and don't realize how modern and how different it is as a musical, Brad.
Well, it is, and it was right in the sort of the height of the MGM musicals, it's certainly not a controversial choice. I mean, it's on so many people's top lists, but it is surprisingly modern, and I think that it's because of the pace, which is a very quick pace. It also is really funny and kind of biting, unsparing about humans, you know. And the opening sequence when they're at the premiere is hilarious. And it's all about, you know, the hypocrisy of Hollywood and simultaneously about how great, these fantasies are. You know, it's about the movie industry itself at the point where it's transitioning from silent to sound, and how everyone was thrown off base because the style of acting for a silent film, the common style of acting, was different than what sound would demand, which is a little more naturalistic, and people were wrestling with it. Well, it was a hilarious thing to set a musical and the producer, Arthur Freed, had really written all of the songs. So in some sense, it was sort of a jukebox musical in that all of the songs in it were songs that were known previously. But because the producer was involved in the songs themselves, it feels strangely personal. It doesn't feel like a jukebox musical would now, where they take...
Yeah. I didn't know until later on, after I'd seen the film years ago, that those songs were not written for the film.
No, they weren't. But they don't feel like Mamma Mia or something like
that,
where they're grabbing a bunch of hits. And maybe it's because maybe the songs weren't all hits, but they were, Arthur Freed had a personal relationship with the songs, and just the structure of the story that was done by Comden and Green, who were terrific writers. It's just so funny, and it's done with such wit, the movie, that it's fast and it's funny, and the musical numbers are all great, and the triad of Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor and Debbie Reynolds is just unbelievable.
It's amazing. We're going to continue with Brad Bird, who is curating The Essentials on TCM, Turner Classic Movies. The first one, Singing in the Rain, we're talking about Saturday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. When we come back, we'll talk about two of my very favorites who follow on successive Saturday nights, Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole and one of the greatest films ever made, Buster Keaton's The General. It's Film Week on KPC. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC and the KPECC app. I'm so glad you could join us as Brad Bird, one of my favorite writer-directors, is with us. So many terrific films, including The Iron Giant, both of the Incredibles films, Ratatouille and more, who is the curator of The Essentials in the new 2020 season, which kicks off a Saturday night with Singing in the Rain. Brad also is bringing to The Essentials next Saturday night, Ace in the Hole, a terrific Billy Wilder film. And let's listen to this excerpt from the 1952 movie. Kirk Douglas stars as a down-and-out newspaper reporter who, in this scene from the start of the film, heading west after his career in New York City falls apart. He stops in Albuquerque, reads a local paper over breakfast, and goes to the paper's editor to try and get a job.
I don't want you to think I expected the New York Times. But even for Albuquerque, this is pretty Albuquerque.
All right. Here's your nickel back. Now, what's all this about my making $200 a week?
Apparently, you're not familiar with my name.
Can't say that I am.
That's because you don't get the Eastern papers out here. I thought maybe once in a while somebody would toss one out of the super cheap and you might have seen my byline. Charles Tatum? Worked in New York, Chicago, Detroit.
What about the 200?
I was coming to that. Mr. Boot, I'm a $250 a week newspaper man. I can be had for 50.
Why are you so good to me?
I know newspapers backward, forward, and sideways. I can write them, edit them, print them, wrap them, and sell them.
Don't need anybody right now.
I can handle big news and little news. And if there's no news, I'll go out and bite a dog.
From Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole, Kirk Douglas, you're hearing there. Brad Bird, you were saying Singing in the Rain, part of the fun is the sort of send-up of Hollywood. This is a biting look at journalism.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we are, nobody doubts how important journalists are, and they're, you know, that's a very vital subject these days. But, you know, because they have a certain power, they're not beyond criticism. And the movie definitely takes them to task for some of their lesser qualities. And I just think it's a fantastic movie and dark as night, you know.
And with the great Billy Wilder dialogue.
Yeah, Billy Wilder was just the sharpest. And so it's definitely one of the reasons I chose it was I was... You know, they say the essentials, and you're sitting there, well, okay, what's essential, you know? That could be a million different things. And I started to reach for, you know, Sunset Boulevard, which is the classic. But then I thought, no, I should mention a film that is really great, but that most people haven't seen. And that's this film, you know. I can't remember when I first saw it, but I was really surprised at the bite of it. And you know, it's a dark film. I understand why it's not as well known, but that doesn't make it any less.
Yeah, and you follow up on Saturday, May 16th. With Buster Keaton's The General, which listeners of Film Week know I talk about this film a lot. It is one of the greatest cinematic achievements imaginable. But I'll let you try and describe it, Brad, because it's a hard film to do justice to verbally.
Yeah, and here you are shoving me off.
Yes. You chose it.
It takes place during the Civil War. Unfashionably, it you know, the hero is a Confederate. But I think that any sort of, you know, it's slightly uncomfortable for that reason because, you know, of the way that we feel about those issues as Americans. But the film, if you look at it as a character piece and as a comedy piece, it's just really fantastic. I mean, Buster Keaton is you know, one of the all-time greats. In some ways, his implacable face seems a little more modern than maybe Chaplin, who was always going for the heartstrings, but who was also fabulous and maybe a little better known than Keaton. But Buster Keaton was an amazing physical comedian, and the set pieces in this movie are huge and funny. And
with no special effects.
No special effects. I mean, when he's doing something that looks dangerous, he's actually doing something that is dangerous.
And I think he broke his back on that film, if I recall.
Yes, I forget.
Seriously injured, yeah.
But the movie was filmed in Oregon, and it has a massive scale to it. And there's a thing towards the end, I won't wreck it by mentioning it, but where you watch this spectacular thing happen, and it's a full-scale thing. It's not a model. And
it's amazing.
We can just say what it is. It's a train plummeting off a trestle. And it's...
You only get one shot at that.
One-take enterprise. And for years, the train sat at the bottom of this river in Oregon, you know, and it was kind of a tourist attraction.
It's just an extraordinary film. We're talking about Buster Keaton's The General from 1926, which was a huge filmic undertaking. Looking just ahead on the schedule, you've got some other ones. The great Preston Sturges, Ball of Fire from 1941. That's not until August, but definitely one for people to put on their calendar, Brad.
Yeah, Yeah, that's another movie that I kind of ran into later than life, and I was startled at how great it was. Howard Hawks is the director, and Billy Wilder had a hand in the screenplay. It was right before he started directing. So, again, you know, my Wilder bias is showing, but, you know, Howard Hawks is a very deft filmmaker and actually very gifted at all kinds of genres, but very good with comedy as well. And it's kind of very, very loosely based on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. But it's about these group of guys who are working on they work full time on an encyclopedia, but they don't get out of the house. They kind of just sit there and are scholars, and something happens where they're suddenly have Barbara Stanwyck, who's like a gun moll, is thrown in their midst, and they do not know how to handle it. And it's really funny and sweet and sharp and all the things that you want from a good comedy.
You also got a classic noir, Out of the Past, from 1947, that's included in your list of essentials. That's another must-see.
Yeah, and you know, at the time that we did this, Kirk Douglas was still alive, but, you know, this is turning slightly into an accidental tribute to Kirk Douglas. You know, we have a few... He's well represented in these movies, and even though the star is of Out of the Past is Robert Mitchum, Kirk Douglas has a big role in it, and it was when he was coming up in Hollywood. And he's another guy, you know, like Mitchum, who just commands your attention. And the movie is really stylish and beautifully shot, and it's just one of the greatest film noirs.
It's terrific. And that's coming up in September. Brad, thank you for being with us, talking about your picks for TCM's The Essentials. Ben Mankiewicz hosting, Brad Bird, the guest curator for the upcoming months. Thanks so much. Brad Bird, the director of the Incredibles films, Ratatouille, The Iron Giant, and so many more. For our Film Week critics, I'm Larry Mantle. Thank you for joining us for another Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. Have a great weekend.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.